Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Oh, South Kakalaka! Don't you dare be sour! Clap for your world famous two-time champs and feel the power! It's a new day. Yes, it is.
For 12-Pack Radio, get excited, y'all.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12-Pack Radio, your podcast source for Pac-12 football news, the home of the Beta Rank College Football Statistical Model. This is a sharp college football podcast. We are in week two already. Woo! Already got those juices flowing. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We had an amazing week one all around, not necessarily for the Pac-12, but we're going to break down every game from week one. We're going to look into week two, and then join me, as always, is Mr. Rob Barron from Sharp College Football. What's going on, Rob?
Not much. I'm excited. Football, like real football, is back. Like, we're almost through week one. Clemson and Georgia Tech are playing as we speak.
There were so many games that were just interesting. I'm trying to think back, because like oftentimes in week one, you get like one or two interesting games, and then you get like the hipster games like Stanford against Kansas State, and you're just kind of like, wow, I didn't ever think those two teams would play each other, and I'm quite intrigued. But this last week, I mean, Utah, Florida, Oregon, Georgia, we'll get to that game. You know, you had all these crazy games go across the week. What stood out for you nationally?
I mean, I think what stood out nationally was the one, Ohio State's defense looked really good. And their offense didn't look as expected, but I think Ryan Day should get the benefit of the doubt on the offensive side. And then, yeah, like Bama, I mean, man, you like talk about like Utah State went from playing UConn last week to Bama this week. Like, whew, that is a major shift. but Bama looked really good, of course, and we'll cover it. Like Georgia looked really, really good, you know. But like, I think it's going to get really, really muddy and messy after that, because like if you looked at like, you know, if you start thinking through like who the potential teams are, like it might be Tennessee and Kentucky. Like it might come down to them for like who's the third best team in the SEC this season. You know, it didn't, like A&M didn't look great. You know.
Oh my goodness, yeah, they're still trying to figure out like who their quarterback is, and yeah, for me, week two's always my most worrisome week, because you don't have enough data, right, to formulate what these teams will be over time. And there is this big looming overreaction cloud that kind of hangs over that second week, where you're looking at teams and you're going, all right, Colorado, for a good example, right? They gave up 250 yards on the ground to TCU. I'm assuming, and we'll get into this, like now they got to go play Air Force in the triple option. So in my mind, I'm immediately like, they are going to get their heads handed to them. And that's what I'm going to pick. But I'm picking this knowing in my head, it is possible that I'm overreacting to what I saw in that week one game. I don't think I don't think so with Colorado. But, you know, like, do you ever run into that kind of stuff where that second week is just always so dangerous, because you could look and go, wow, that team is awesome. Like USC is awesome. They beat the tar out of Rice. But it's USC, and, you know, if you're not careful and if you don't know the history of these teams and kind of like what they bring to the table, there really is a big danger of jumping in with both feet when you don't quite know what these teams are yet.
Right. I mean, and that's where you should look, like people should look through and see. I mean, look, there's going to be week one wackiness in there. You know, USC is an excellent example. You're not always going to get three pick sixes in a game. Like, you shouldn't count on that. So, but what you should look for is you should look for things that help confirm things that you already know, right? Like, you know, I mean, it's only the things like we know things about some of these teams. It's when we see things and we're like, oh, well, that doesn't quite match up to what we were expecting, right? Like, that's when you have to kind of come back and say, all right, like, what do we have here? Right. You know, and should we look at it? I would also look at, I mean, like I do, like I tell people to do any week, like look at turnovers, right? Like turnovers are going to be instances where, I mean, in particular, if you're driving and you give the ball up, that's wiping points off the board more often than not. Or like if you're not driving, that means you're probably on your own side of the field and you just gifted the other team really good field position. That kind of stuff matters and can turn games. So look for that kind of stuff. I mean, like the silly stuff, right? Of like, I mean, LS, like, is LSU going to muff two punts in a game, you know, this season? Like, probably not. Like, that's really unlikely to happen, you know?
That game was so freaking wild. Like I say this often, like college sport isn't the greatest sport, but it's the best sport, right? Like where, yeah, you know, you don't have the best athletes in the world. And that's what makes the sport so fun, where like you have these muff punts and missed field goals at the end of that game was just absolutely bonkers. One of the things, you know, last big picture thing, and to narrow it down to the Pac-12, particularly in week one, what I try to do is take a step back and look at performances where I'm just going to put a little flag on what I saw in the box score. And I watched almost all of these games. So it's not like I'm just looking at the box score. It's more, like, so for example, right, Colorado giving up 275 rushing yards to TCU, a team that really prides itself on passing. Sonny Dykes isn't known for his like ginormous rushing attack. That is a flag for me because I want to see what Colorado does against Air Force. And if Air Force runs for 450 yards, which is quite possible, like, you know, like now we're starting.
Daniels is healthy. That was like our only question coming into this year because he had offseason surgery and the coach kind of like hinted that he might not be available for the first couple of games. And lo and behold, he absolutely is.
Joke's on you, Carl Durrell. Another one, Oregon gave up like 450 passing yards or some bonkers number to Georgia. I was watching, like I watched that game very closely and look, I know it's Georgia, right? Elite talent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Man, them wide receivers were, and the tight ends, obviously, you know, to be fair, but, right. But that secondary for Oregon, that was one of the question marks we had coming in. And yes, they played one of the best teams in the country, but they certainly didn't play like they belonged on that field with them. I'm interested in that. You know what?
Like, not only that, but like Georgia didn't lean into running the football very much. But if you look at the guys that were getting quite a bit of the, you know, the carries, you know, they didn't like, they spread the ball around certainly, but you know, like Georgia averaged 5.3 per carry. Like Georgia could have run the ball in that game too.
Oh man, I'm so excited to talk about it. Like just to dig into that game. Here are a couple other things on my end though. Like as I was looking through these, so Utah giving up 275 yards to, this is the second mobile quarterback now like that I've seen so far that's torched that team. So I'm flagging, I'm putting that back in the back of my mind. Like I thought Utah played well against Florida, but and I know it's right. Anthony Richardson is that the Florida guy? I forget his name.
Yeah.
Anyway, that like that guy and Jalen Hall got what they needed almost every time. And I'm just keeping an eye on that. And then I thought Cal giving up 400 yards to UC Davis was a bit much. Like that worries me.
You think? you think?
So just now, to their credit, they won and covered that spread. And I thought it was going to come out at 21 and I was going to jump all over UC Davis. And to Cal's credit, they gave up that touchdown early.
They almost got outgained by UC Davis. Like those are important things to look at, like by the by, right? Like also look, cause like, look, like teams are going to screw up, particularly early in the season. They're not going to be able to finish drives, that kind of thing, right? Like somebody might just have a bad day at the office overall, like putting points on the board. But like keep an eye on like if teams are getting yards put up on them, right? Like if somebody's like, oh my gosh, like look at our great defensive performance. Like if you give up 387 yards, and that game was not in garbage time for, you know, a good chunk of it, right? Like, yeah. You know, so like if you're giving up that kind of stuff, like that's a big question mark. I mean, giving up 145 rushing, 242 in the air to an FCS team, not great, Cal.
Not good. With that said, Rob, like, are there any other general thoughts, general ideas you had in the Pac-12 before we dive into the games specifically?
I mean, like I think, and look, like Colorado's own beat writer for the Denver Post brought this up. Like when things got out of hand in that second half, like that team's body language wasn't great on the sideline. Mm. And I don't want to get too much into like reading people's facial expressions. But I mean, the big concern I think that everyone has about Colorado coming into this season, particularly given that like they play 11 Power Five opponents and their one non Power Five opponent is Air Force, who might be the best Group of Five team in the country this year. Not great, right? This could be really tough. I think the other big takeaway is, it has to be Arizona. It just has to be people around the country said that. And whether it was Spencer Hall to, national football writers, there's like this most surprising result from Saturday was Arizona whipping San Diego State. And it wasn't a fluke. If you open up the box score, that wasn't a fluke.
No, they straight up beat them. And it was fun. And it's just knowing where this program was a few years ago. And I love this. Like I had the same feeling about Colorado in that COVID year. I'm like, oh snap. Like they're actually putting these together. So I had that same like exuberance when Arizona dropped 38 points on a San Diego State defense. That's supposed to be pretty darn good. And when you take a look at those teams and you look at Delora, and I like, look again in the lost episodes, I had Delora as like the third best quarterback in the Pac-12.
You were right.
Well, we'll see. It's possible that that's the case, but I want to see a little bit more. But I think the most important part is that Arizona can move that football finally, and that will make that team fun. And fun might be 38-48 or 52-50, but it will be fun. Yeah. And it's nice to have that bottom dweller pop up a little bit and make a game of some of these things. So I definitely hear you on that.
The last one, though, is Wazoo.
Oh, Lord
Almighty. Really struggling. Really riding the struggle bus against the
Idaho,
highly vaunted Idaho Vandals from Moscow. Here's the thing. Like everyone talked about, the man that drove Jaden Delora off the Palouse. You know, like in we were. Maybe I more than you was fairly high on what this offense could be and thought that this could work. The import your QB and offensive coordinator from the FCS and see if it works. And a lot of people, I think, around college football were pretty high on Cam Ward. And he wasn't good. 25 of 40, 215, 5.44 per. That's a pretty rough outing. That's for gross. An air raid offense.
That's really bad. Now, to be fair,
against an FCS school.
To be fair, there were a couple of fumbles, a scoop and score. We'll get to that game, but I hear you too. Yeah. Like I'm super worried. We went to that, like we're going to the Washington State.
Yeah, we are. Wisconsin. We're gonna see this in person against Wisconsin.
It's gonna be a disaster. Like they could get this could be Georgia, Oregon all over again, just like the third tier type of game on that front, like the undercard of the Oregon Georgia. We'll see. I hope that's not the case. And again, we always talk about trying not to overreact. So Rob, let's get into these games. We're going to go through everyone that was played. We're going to look forward into week two, and let's do it right after this.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
William Shatner?
You want it?
Pac-12 gambling lines? Nice.
You want it? Baby, just bust a move.
Okay.
All right, we're back. Feels good. Feels good to be talking real games. What I think we're going to do here, Rob, is we're going to go into the results, and then we'll break down each team's matchup from that result, right? So, for example, look, Oregon fans, I'm gonna hold off on you guys. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to hold off on you guys. I want to start with Oregon State. Oregon State, 34. Boise State, 17. This game could have been way closer. Like, way closer than it looked. And look, I was...
You mean five turnovers might shoot you in the foot a little bit?
Dude, who is it? Bachmeier?
Yeah.
He looked awful. Like, just...
He got pulled. I mean, he's been the guy for, like, a couple of years. Jack Sears could beat him out. Like...
Oh, it was bad. I mean, like, if you didn't watch this game... Boise State basically lost this game in the first 10 minutes. It was multiple interceptions, a fumble. Like, Boise just shot itself in the foot over and over and over. And, like, once that game started, if Chance Nolan is on, it's over. It's over. Yeah. And he threw for 250. Now, he had two picks. But the thing that was interesting for me about this game was the fact that, like, he did look more confident. I want to see this wide receiving core against a better secondary, because they look kind of good, and I don't trust it yet, right? Like, how many times have we looked at this wide receiving core and been like, meh, nope. I still think that's the case, but I'm curious what you thought about the result here.
Yeah, I mean, look, Boise had a decent defense last year, but they weren't good against the pass. They're 27 in beta rank last year overall defensively, but 47 in effective pass. So it is perhaps not the best gauge of where Oregon State's receiving core is. But look, I mean, I think offensively for the Beavs, like, you know, look, Andy Avalos, he was a pretty good DC at Oregon. I mean, he was a pretty good DC for Boise State when he was there. I think largely this Boise State defense is going to be as good as some of the other ones you're going to see in the Pac-12, just maybe not defending the pass. Overall, you got to like what you saw from the Beavs. You know, now they did one thing I think to keep an eye on is against this Boise defense, which was very good against the run last year. They did struggle a little bit to run the football comparatively. If you go in and look at where Martinez and Fenwick's yards were, they were both below four. And so that's a little bit of a concern, because that's certainly more of their bread and butter. But you could all, I mean, I also think certainly Boise was stacking the box a little bit, basically daring Nolan to beat them. And he did. I mean, he had enough. I mean, he took a lot of shots downfield. He's not the most accurate passer, but it sort of feels like, I mean, look, this is sort of true of that, of like Jaden Daniels. Like, it's almost like Jaden Daniels and Travis last night, the quarterback for FSU. Like, they're not really great, like, accurate downfield passers, but anything that they get you downfield is just pure gravy and maybe opens up the offense. And that's what it's going to be like for Nolan, right? Like, if he can be a legitimate threat to hit a big pass, maybe 20% of the time, you know, if he takes that shot, like, that's something you actually have to respect.
Oh, absolutely. And like, and as I opened, you know, almost sounded like, you know, Nolan had 450 yards and he didn't, he only had 250, but right. To your point, like, almost all of those were explosive passes. Like, he had three passes that were more than 40 yards. He hit that Luke Musgrave bomb. And then, like, basically because this game was over, they could just run the ball. And to your point, right, like, Boise's stacking the box and you take a look and you go, oh, well, I guess the running game wasn't great. I do think that some of that was more just like, hey y'all, we've won this game. Let's just kind of keep that clock rolling. So I would expect that running game to be a little bit better. And the fact that Nolan might be able to gun it if teams are stacking the box, that makes this Oregon State team a little bit more dangerous than I had anticipated. You know, anything else jump out you in this result before we take a look at their matchup against Fresno State? Because that's going to be a good one, too.
I mean, look, they did struggle to contain Green as a runner when he came in. And I think you could argue, like, he was particularly dangerous there. But it's hard to gauge. I mean, look, it's hard to gauge with this Boise offense. They weren't great last season. Even when Bachmeier was better than he was, you know, last night, they were only at 61 in beta rank last year. Oregon State's clearly going to see some better offenses than that. I hesitate to come to any conclusions about where this defense is in a game where they're getting not a great, I mean, Boise's got a decent group of five offense, but not a great offense. And they get five turn. I mean, there's an immense amount of turnover, like, there. So, look, I mean, TBD on two things. Like, one, I want to see Boise be able to run the football against Fresno. And two, we're going to get a much better view of where this defense is.
Yeah, if you watch this game and you didn't watch college football, you would have come across been like, wow, that secondary just totally revamped for Oregon State. I just think it was bad passes. Like, I don't buy that the secondary is just, guns blazing. They're just going to be a stop unit. I am curious what Fresno brings to the table, Rob, when we take a look here, because I think that this could be one of those games where what I saw on the field from Oregon State, like as well as they played, they could have lost this game if Bachmeier hadn't thrown up all over the place like the last, the first 20 minutes. I think they get a better team that's better coached, right? They get Jeff Tedford, they get Jake Haner. What are we looking at with this Fresno State team, and where are they strong and where are they weak?
So Fresno finished last season overall number 45. They were 45 on defense and beta ranked. Pretty good defense all around. They're at 52 on offense, and far, far better throwing the football. And that was really the Beavs' weakness last year. So, and we should really expect that again. Fresno's going to come in. They're going to look to throw the football around. Can the Beavs legitimately slow this down is a big question, because I think that's going to be the one that, and Haner is not, he's a step above Bachmeier. Can they run the football with any kind of efficiency too? Those are my big questions. But look, this is on the road. Fresno, I believe, is favored in Vegas, in this one. This is gonna be a really good test for where Oregon State is. And look, it's a really good, it's a really good, it's a really good place for them to find themselves, where they, went in and won the game, against a Boise team that, they weren't much of a favorite against, right? But now they get Fresno on the road. I think Vegas opened it as Fresno as a 1-point favorite. I'm interested to see, where is Boise's pass defense, right? Like, Fresno's not going to test them on the ground much. Yeah. But you can't come in and just, hope and pray for 5 turnovers to kind of drop in your lap. And then, like I said, can they run, if they can run the football, and Nolan can be sort of what we saw, which is somewhat dangerous throwing, I think they should be fine. I think they should be fine to be able to hang in this game. Fresno was a little bit better against the run than they were against the pass last year. 37 an effective rush, 61 an effective pass. They're good at, I think they're going to have a shot to be able to throw the football a little here.
Yeah. I don't trust Oregon State as much on the road as I do at home. And I'm going to take, so the spread opened at Fresno giving 1 to Oregon State. I'm going to take Fresno. I think they're going to be able to score points. I think they're going to be well coached. I think that they're at home. And I just need to see this defense from Oregon State. I don't trust it. I think they might be getting a little bit of, I think a lot of people saw what Oregon State did, and just, I think I might get a few points of value there on that front. I would very much like the Beavers to win this game. If they do, it's a huge win. It sounds silly that it's a group of 5 team, but on the road against a good coach, against a good quarterback, and if you're able to pull out a win here, then heck yeah, let's go. I'm really excited about Oregon State and what they're able to do. I just, I'm going to pump the brakes and I'm going to take Fresno. I think Fresno is going to win this game. But I think it's going to be competitive, and I'm going to keep an eye on that over, because yes, the Beavs only held Boise State to 17, but that was aided by a lot of turnovers. And I think Haner's just going to be a better quarterback and he's going to be able to move the ball down the field.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
55.5, by the way, is the over. So just keep a look at that. I just think that there's going to be a lot of points on that front. All right, let's go. Let's stay late night. Let's reward everybody that stayed up late. Pac-12 After Dark. The other game that we had while this game was going on, by the way, was Washington, who beat Kent State 45-20. Holy goodness. Mike Penix.
I try to tell people, do not judge him on the year when Nick Sheridan was his offensive coordinator, the 2 years of that.
He lit this team up like a Christmas tree. It was awesome. 345 yards, 4 touchdowns, 10 yards per pass, which I love, right? We were just talking about Cam Ward, 5 or whatever, 4 years. But we'll talk about Bo Nix too. Like, 10 yards or fast. That cat was slinging that ball down the field, and this offense looks great. Now, I went 500, by the way, on the week. I got waxed with my bets, but, you know, it was only week one. I liked Washington in this game because I just didn't think Kent State was going to be able to stop him. And I like Kalen DeBoer. I think he's going to be, I just really like what I think he'll be able to do with this offense. A couple things came to mind, you know, in addition to Penix, you know, we talked about it on the podcast, and Washington had released their depth chart about, like, I think it was a few hours or a day before the game or whatever. And basically none of the running backs that had played last year were in the depth chart. It was like the Virginia transfer, the Nebraska transfer. And that turned out to be the case, right? I think it's Tula Papa, the Virginia transfer, got the majority of the carries, and then Will Nixon, the Nebraska guy. So anyway, it was nice to see this offense hum. I'm sure if you're a Washington fan, you are super giddy. Just know against State's defense, probably not the best. Giving up 20 points to them gives me a little bit of, you know, I kind of assumed that Kent State would score, though. They had a at least a fast offense. What did you think about the result here?
I thought this was really good for Washington. You know, look, I mean, they struggled a little bit with Schley. You know, he's mobile as well. I mean, and he didn't, you know, he didn't have a great completion percentage, but they certainly hit some. I mean, he certainly hit some big ones in the game against them. But, like, I think overall for Washington, right, like the biggest question, you know, and there are some questions I think about, like, what the defense is going to look like this year, but I think they'll still largely be fine. They really needed an offensive bounce back. And you have to feel like they got it after out of this. Like the wide receivers were largely looked pretty good. It's what you really kind of wanted this. I mean, could it have been better? Sure, right? But at no point would you come away thinking like, oh no, like this was a disaster, right? Or I have questions. Like you mostly come into this thinking like, all right, like I mean, they're going to roll this week, and then we'll get to see them against Michigan State.
Yeah. Basically every wide receiver that you've heard on this show and every other show in Washington got like a significant amount of play and passes and receptions and yards. So,
yeah,
which is great. And as they play, you know, the next game on Washington's schedule is Portland State. We don't do the lines for the FCS stuff, A, because they usually don't come out until like, you know, way later. And B, like we just, you know, we're not FCS experts yet, emphasis on the yet, as Vader Rank starts to dip its toe into the water on that front. But anything that you're looking out for, Rob, in the Huskies matchup against the Vikings? The Vikings, right? I should know that.
Yeah, I mean, again, like you want to see some, look, I don't expect, like, this is one of those ones, like, they're probably not going to put a lot on tape before they go play Michigan State, right? And hopefully they also held some stuff back against Kent State. But yeah, like they're going to, like, they'll probably have some pretty vanilla looks. You'd like to see them slow things down, you know, keep Portland State boxed up. This is one of those ones of like, Washington looks pretty good. Don't give us anything that'll concern us.
Yeah. I really want to see them rush the ball. I want to see if they can get that ground game going. I saw Penix. I get it. I've seen him before. Like, you know, I'm confident that Washington will be able to throw the ball around the field. I want to see if they can run it too, so that they can keep that offense open. Let's get it out of the way here, Rob.
Right. now we're going to take the plunge.
So real talk here. Georgia 98, Oregon 3, basically. I mean, I watched this whole game. I was trying to find a way to describe it because this was just a full, unabridged ass kicking. And like, so the thing, like, I was trying, like, how would I, so if you ever been to like Joe's Crab Shack or something, you know, the places where you have the people, they have that stupid bib on and they're just cracking open bits of crab and like ripping it apart and like digging all the remains out. It was like that, except Georgia was sophisticated. Like they were wearing like a top hat and white gloves as they did it. Like this was a beautiful, disruptive punching in the face of a program that we thought was on the rise, right? With Oregon, you freaking had their defensive coordinator on your, as your head coach.
Right.
And you could not stop Stetson Bennett. You couldn't stop the running game, and you didn't score a freaking touchdown. And I apologize to if you follow me on Twitter, I took this loss personally because I had three separate bets on Oregon. So I want Oregon to be good. I was just so mad that the spread was 17.5. The first half, team total was 7.5. Like if you're Oregon and you're a serious program that thinks that you're challenging for the national title, this proved all of that wrong. Like, now maybe you're still good in the Pac-12, which could certainly be the case, and Georgia is awesome. But if you're looking for a natty, like, you got a lot of work to do. What did you think? What jumped out for you?
I mean, there's a couple of things. One, you know, Kirby Smart tried to be polite to a guy that he is probably friends with in Dan Lanning, and after the game say, oh man, he just doesn't have the players, right? Like, that's a very polite way of saying, like, that is basically saying, like, hey, this isn't your fault. And I just want to be clear, some of this is Dan Lanning's fault. Right? Like, Kirby is trying to, like, deflect, like, oh, he doesn't have the players, right? Like, I think it's pretty clear at some positions, Oregon does not have the players. But here's the thing. Like, Georgia last season was a really good offense. But they weren't, like, last season, offenses took a little bit of a dip. You know, we're not talking about like 2019, 2020 level offenses last year. Georgia was really good. They were just mostly like a fantastic defense. But Georgia lost their really good wide receivers to the NFL, right? They lost a ton of defensive players to the NFL. And they basically just came in with the guys that were last year's backups and worked Oregon. And some of these Oregon guys, like, and this is, I mean, I'm sorry, but like, this is true. Like, it's not even like the recruiting gap is a little bit there. The development gap is immense, like, between these two schools. Because look, I mean, like, there's plenty of guys that went to, like, the you look at for Oregon and you're like, oh yeah, like, they look great. They look great getting off the bus, but they don't produce. And frankly, I mean, this defense was bad last year, and I really full on expected them to be better, and they were not.
Dude, Stetson,
like, they were not. Yeah. Like, Stetson Bennett lit him up. You know, some of that is, I mean, look, Bennett's not going to play on Sundays, but it doesn't mean he's not a perfectly serviceable college quarterback throwing to a bunch of dudes that are going to play on Sundays, you know, but the other part was, is like, look, I mean, and there are people saying, like, I mean, and, you know, Oregon, you know, or Georgia didn't run the ball really well. Like, Georgia didn't put up big plays running the ball last year because people stacked the box. Like, what did Oregon try to do a little bit? Like, they tried to make Stetson Bennett beat them. Like, did that work? No, it did not. Like, did he beat them? Yes, he did. But, like, they still got run on, right? Like, I guess it's just like, you come away from this and looking at this Oregon team, and I'm sorry, but, like, look, like, you can throw on these guys, right? Like, you can throw on Oregon. Like, not everybody's going to have Georgia's talent at wide receiver, but there are some quarterbacks that are better than Stetson Bennett in the Pac-12. You can run on them. Guess who they got to play again? Utah.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. It was just a big, like, and then the offense with Dillingham and Bo Nix. I mean, look, I don't want, like, I just, like, I don't care. Like, I don't want to hear it anymore. I don't want to hear about Oregon's amazing offensive line and how many guys go to the NFL. Doesn't matter. You guys are underachieving. Like, that's wonderful. You have a great offensive line. You send guys to the NFL. You have a bunch of guys playing wide receiver that can't get open, and you have zero quarterback development. Bo Nix was not good, and Ty Thompson couldn't beat him out. Like,
yeah.
Oregon in a lot of positions, and look, this is a new staff, maybe they can start over. Oregon in a lot of positions that really matter on a football field is a black hole for talent. Guys come in, they're highly regarded, they're not developed, they're put in systems that don't get the most out of them. Like, I just, like, this isn't, like, this didn't just happen this year. Like, this has been Oregon's MO.
The one thing, so, It's Georgia's secondary.
And they will develop. Like, this is not forever. This is game one. Yeah. You know, like
the two things that worried me in this game, you know, other than Bo Nix and not being able to score a touchdown the entire game, was the like you mentioned, the secondary for Oregon, like, not ready. Now, not ready for prime time in terms of playing a playoff team. We'll see how they play against the Pac-12, but there are good wide receivers in the Pac-12, and like you mentioned, there are good quarterbacks. But that was a big red flag for me. The second, to your point, was like their wide receivers were not open. And I understand that it's Georgia's secondary. It's one of the best defenses in the world, like outside the NFL.
Right.
But how many freaking years have we looked at this as this roster and been like, oh, like look at all these amazingly talented players that have high pedigree that are at the wide receiver position. I hope as Oregon continues to play that these players develop, because it would be very fun to have wide receivers that can get open. But here's the problem. You have Bo Nix throwing to them. He threw two picks in this game immediately and shot any idea that Oregon fans had of winning this game. You saw that first pick and I'm like, nope, like we're done here.
Yeah.
Like this is, you cannot do that against Georgia. So I this worries me. Like we'll see. Cause the Pac-12
is a horrible matchup to start out. Like with the new coaching staff, right? Like you definitely, like you're not going to get your feet under you necessarily in this, but it's disappointing. I mean, this is a really disappointing. Like, I mean, look, if Oregon would have lost by 20, fine, sure.
Yeah.
But like, you would have felt, and that sounds weird. Like you lose by three possessions. Like you can at least feel decent about it. Like this was, in no way close. And look, I mean, Oregon couldn't even do anything in garbage time. And the majority of this game was garbage time.
Yeah. The worrisome thing for me and our friend Adam Chimeo at Quack 12 Podcast was like tweeting, is it time to put Ty Thompson in yet? And I'm like, I don't think he's good. Like, because he couldn't beat out your quarterback last year, or he couldn't beat out Bo Nix. So let's like, I'm worried. And then you got Robbie Ashford that's like running all over the place at Auburn. It was like your third stringer. I don't know. It's bizarre. They play Eastern Washington next. I want to see, can you light up that scoreboard through the air? I don't care about your running game. I don't. I want you to throw that ball, and I want to see what you can do against Eastern Washington.
And look, Eastern Washington has a fun, and it has for years, has been known as like, you know, a little bit of fun FCS offense. They absolutely have to shut him down. Like they cannot have a Cal UC Davis moment.
Yeah. I don't mean to be brutal, but like that was a brutal game. Like they just tore apart Oregon, and it was not, that whole game was a disaster. So, all the way up to the very end where they were trying to finally score a touchdown and we're still not able to do it. You have Kirby Smart, like cheering on the sideline. Like it's just that from start to finish, it was pretty much a mess. All right, Rob, let's talk about Utah and Florida, and let's do it.
Let's get the other one out of the way. Yeah, all right, sure.
Let's do it right after this. All right, we're back. I feel like I went to therapy. Just getting that all off my chest, that Oregon game. Moving on, we have Florida, who beat Utah 29-26. This game was fun. Like, this whole game was fun. I super enjoyed this game. It was competitive. Utah should have won this game multiple times and did not. And if this game was like, look, I don't know what would have happened if Utah played Georgia, but they didn't. They played Florida in the swamp. They lost by three. Really, the story of this game, I thought, Rob, was the fact that they had the ball inside the 10 on like first and goal and didn't score in both instances. Like they lost. Like they just really did have an opportunity to win this game. Not only, I mean, like the pick at the end, you know, when the tight end slipped in the end zone, like at the end of the game, like, yes, that clearly was a backbreaking play. But I thought this game was lost earlier in the, in the game just because they weren't able to convert in the red zone.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a legit argument that I think Rising got in on third down, but they didn't review it for reasons I don't understand. but more to the point, Utah didn't force it on the review, so maybe Utah's, but like they probably should have on that. But yeah, like this, like Utah had it's not that Utah went in and got completely outplayed, but there are some concerns coming out of this game. I think in the second half, well, Utah certainly was able to like drop the hammer down, and they were certainly able to run the football pretty well in the game. Particularly after some adjustments they made on the offensive line going to the second half. You flip it around, and we had talked about coming into the, I did, and I've had some Utah folks push back on this, but like I asked questions. I didn't think the defensive line last year was really good. I thought they put up a bunch of numbers mostly against the Pac-12. Their defensive line got worked in that second half. they got pushed around. And look, Anthony, like, you know, like anybody's going to struggle with Anthony Richardson. Like, he is a absolute physical specimen, you know, and like he himself brings a significant element to the run game. But like Florida's normal run game was pretty good, you know, like in particular against, you know, in that second half. And you realize how much the guys that they did had last year helped. You know, in particular, I think the linebackers coming in and you know, getting off blocks and causing havoc. I mean, there's like, look, I don't think this is going to end up being like a bad loss for Utah. I don't think Utah's out of the playoff conversation. I think Florida's going to be a lot better. Like Florida's, I think, going to finish this year probably ranked. You know, it could be tough for them because you are going to have to play Kentucky and Tennessee, who are pretty good, and Georgia. But you know, overall, like, I mean, I think this Florida team's going to be able to pile up some wins. And, you know, like, yeah, I don't think this is the end of the world for Utah. There's some real positives. But, yeah, I mean, like, I think the real questions, I think, if you're a Utah fan or on the defensive side of this game, because I thought the offense, they definitely had their struggles in the first half, but I felt like they put it together.
Yeah, Tavion Thomas fumbling, right? When there was a couple issues with him fumbling earlier last year. So that just – I'm just playing a little flag there. Just want to keep an eye on that. And him slipping like right on that first drive. It's just like, man, like two back-to-back play, like bad plays by Thomas in like the first quarter. That was a bummer because that could have been the difference. I mean, that's the thing. Like if you're a Utah fan, the positive side of this is you could look back and see like three instances where you win this game, four actually, that you could actually win this game. But that didn't happen. And Richardson just torched them. The thing that bothered me with this was when the game was on the line, like, Richardson got the first downs. Richardson got the touchdown. Like when they're doing that read option, like, I appreciate Scally. I think Whittingham's a great coach. Like, why don't you just say, everybody just go after Richardson. Don't even worry about anything else. Because like I think everybody in that stadium knew where that ball was going except the Utah players. That kind of bothered me because there's multiple plays where like you just kind of knew that this guy's getting the ball and they're going to ride with him or die with him, and they rode him and they freaking – I mean they won the game. It was because of him. I don't know. What do you think about that? Am I being too nitpicky?
No, I think that's right. I mean I don't think that they had anyone that could effectively spy Richardson, right? And they weren't getting good pressure. Like they just weren't. Like the defensive line wasn't getting a good push. And that's probably like, look, they're not going to run into like Billy Napier prides himself on O-line coaching, that comes with this team, you know, like you're probably not going to run into an offensive line that's as good as this Florida offensive line in the Pac-12, but it is a concern. Like I think, you know, that's something to keep an eye on in the future. And look, like, I mean, they get the Beavs again this year. Like the Beavs ran on them last year, you know? What do you, I mean, like, you used to joke around about like JT Daniels getting Amon-Ra St. Brown vision, right? Like tunnel vision.
Uh-huh.
Like it was Keithy vision, right? Like, I mean, it was like Keithy or bust.
They don't have anybody else though. Like
there isn't. I mean, that's what's truly concerning is that like it is literally no one else beyond Keithy. And I think Florida knew that, right? Like, and that allowed them to slow Utah down more than maybe Utah would have expected. And maybe look, other Pac-12, like we talked, I try to talk to everyone, like Florida actually had a sneaky decent defense last year. Patrick Toney's a really good defensive coordinator. But the fact that you really only have to figure out so much with this Utah offense, it did end up being a bit of a problem for them. If they have a legit wide receiving threat, they probably win this game by 10 points.
Yeah. I mean, like you can argue Dalton Kincaid is also good, but he's a tight end, right? So I think.
Yeah, Kincaid's good, right? That's who, you know, but like, again, like on that last intercept, on the play that was intercepted, he's looking for Kincaid. He's looking for a tight end.
Yeah. The thing that bothers me is like when we previewed this game, right? We basically said they're going to game plan around these tight ends. But I just thought that Utah was a good enough team to be able to push through. And they were. They just freaking, like, there was two or three. Like, they were so close. And Thomas fumbles that football. And I'm like, dang, like, because Thomas is a beast. And I think he's going to be fine when he comes to Pac-12 play. I think he's going to be fine in non-conference and, like, whatever bowl they go to, as long as the fumbling issues don't happen, which we just saw in Florida again. But, like, that game was frustrating because this could have really been a premier win for the Pac-12. It would have made up for that Georgia Oregon game, and it wasn't. It ended up being like a disappointing loss. But if you're Utah, I still think you have a shot at the playoff, like you mentioned. And
I don't think the perception nationally was like I think people were very impressed by what they saw from Florida. And I don't think it was like a knock on Utah. I think most people are just like, oh yeah, Florida might actually be really good this year.
That'd be nice. I hope that's the case. Anything else? Like, so Utah has Southern Utah. I mean, is there anything in this game that you're looking for? I don't care. Like, I just think.
No, there's nothing. There's literally nothing. Hey, I mean, it's like, don't give us anything to be concerned about. That's it.
Yeah.
Right?
10:30 a.m. That's an early kick.
No injuries. Pacific. Get it moving. Woo. Yeah.
Where do you want to go next?
Oh, geez. Should we do ASU?
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a fun game this week.
Yes. Beat NAU 40-3. 250 yards on the ground, 150 passing. Emory Jones was fine. All the rushing all the time, basically. And they held NAU under 125 yards. I was really hoping. Oh, and there was an Andre Johnson sighting. I was pretty excited about that. In my mind, this was the best possible. Like, I didn't think ASU was going to.
This is as good as they could have looked, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is like, there's like no complaints. Like, you know, like if 5 out of 5 Uber rating for ASU on this one, right? Like, no notes. Like,
I'm trying to look. So it looks like they opened as an 11-point underdog on the road at Oklahoma State. And I know, Rob, you've previewed Oklahoma State. You know, their game was fascinating. I mean, they dropped a 50 burger, which is interesting with Spencer Sanders that they did that. The defense, a little. I was really hoping that Oklahoma State was just going to beat the doors off of Western Michigan and ASU. Like, maybe that game was like 21-7 or something. But we got divergent in both directions. What do you think about 11 points? And what does Oklahoma State bring to the table?
Look, Oklahoma State last week went out and really, I mean, crapped the bed once they took the foot off the gas, right? Like, you can look at, you know, what they were doing offensively and defensively. There's like a clear peak where, like, you can see where the starters got pulled on offense and you can see where the starters got pulled on defense. And then things went very downhill. And that's interesting. Like, look, like, Oklahoma State lost a ton off of that really good defense last year. Last year on defense, they were ranked at number 3 overall in beta rank, and they lost a lot of players. So I don't think they're deep, right? Like, and I think Derek Mason's a good defensive coordinator. I mean, so there's like, I think they're going to be fun, you know, defensively. I think ASU is certainly going to have a harder time moving the football against this unit than they clearly did against NAU, you know. And they ran the ball really well. Like, Valade is a very good back. The offensive line looked pretty good. I mean, but this is what you want to see. Like, you want to see your starter running for 7.7 per against an FCS team, right?
Yeah.
But I think the questions are, is like, man, if you're like, can they be varied enough and interesting enough in the run game? Can Emory Jones add enough in the run game to really mess with the Cowboys? Look, they were able to hit some big passes because NAU was clearly loading up the box to try to stop a running game that was punching them in the face. But Oklahoma State's going to probably be able to cover these guys, you know, largely, right? Like, they're going to, like, I think Oklahoma State will be far more successful when they go to single coverage, you know, against Arizona State's wide receivers. And that's where this game's going to be won or lost for ASU, is like, can they add more of a passing dimension in? Do they have that in their pocket? And then again, like, you flip it around, like, this is a total change from what we saw from, or, you know, against NAU does like to throw the ball around a bit more. Oklahoma State's a little bit more of a run game, you know, but they did last week lean on Sanders throwing the football a little more against a bad Central Michigan defense. But I do expect them to run, like, to try to run the football. I'm interested to see where ASU shakes out, right? Like, they looked pretty good against NAU, but that's an FCS team, and I don't want to read too much into it. Like, they looked like a competent Power 5 unit. Like, does that carry over against, a step up in competition?
Yeah, I'm curious how many yards. Well, it's just difficult because, like you mentioned, it's that second unit that came in. I'm worried about Emory Jones throwing the ball. Because
right.
if he turns the ball over, like, ASU does not cover the spread. And I often don't say this, right? Like, on your, like, this tends to be something that, like, from an advanced statistics standpoint, like, don't turn the ball over is like one of the most important things. For like in this particular game where, like, I think you have to get a it doesn't have to be a perfect game from Emory Jones. It just has to be you have to avoid the mistakes. And if that's
just to not turn the ball over and maybe run for 100 and throw for 150.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he can do that. And I think if he does that, ASU, like, what does Herm do? He keeps games close. That's what he does.
Yeah.
And we're getting a double digit spread against the team whose defense is getting revamped and was kind of a problem in the second half. Now, granted, it's because they have new players in, but still, you know, I'm going to take the 11. I think ASU at least covers this game. I think there's a world where they actually win this game. I don't think that world is often, like, you know, the multiverse.
It's a Spencer Sanders turnover game is what you're looking at, right? Like, Sanders isn't hot. You know, I mean, look, like, Central Michigan, like, they threw the football against this. So, I mean, once they got the backups in for Oklahoma State, those guys could not cover, apparently. But, I mean, look, I mean, Oklahoma State's going to have the starters in likely all game against ASU, right? Like, 11 points does feel like a lot. I'm probably with you. I'm going to take Arizona State with that. But this is a tough one. Because it is, I mean, both of these teams, like, how much do you take away from an FCS game? Like, oh, well, they looked good. They look like a normal Power 5 program play an FCS team.
I think we know what this team is. I mean, like, I know their secondary they had to replace, but T. Marcus Davis wasn't in this game. He was out with a leg injury. He's going to be in. I think one of their other corners is questionable, but like, we know they're going to run the ball. We know their defensive line, their offensive line is pretty good. You know, we know that their wide receivers aren't great, and we know Spencer Sanders. Like, you know, I feel like of most of these games, I have more of an understanding of what I'm getting into in week two with these two teams than I do with some of these other programs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not fair. I don't know. All right, let's move to UCLA. Let's do the LA schools here. UCLA 45, Bowling Green 17. The opening of this game looked like UCLA was coached by Clay Helton. Like, their punter just got lit the F up, and, you know, scoop and score touchdown. Bad special teams. They literally had two players wearing the same jersey, which is what USC did, like, the year before Clay Helton was fired. Like, it was just like, I was dying. But to their credit, once things calmed down, and I took UCLA in this game, once things calmed down, like, UCLA got to business, and, like, I was actually looking for holes to poke. And then, you know, I watched the majority of this game, and then I looked back at the box score, and, like, this is the exact box score that you want to see for UCLA playing Bowling Green.
In fact, I mean, like, there's no, like, only, like, the actual final score is a little bit deceiving. Like, UCLA absolutely smoked these guys. And look, Bowling Green was replacing a lot on offense. We talked about that. This is probably as good of a result as you could have expected from UCLA's defense, only giving up 162 total yards. Like, that's really good. So this is a lot like the ASU result. Like, this is exactly what you want to see. Like, no notes. Great job, you know? And I think that's, you know, like, but we get another one of those this week, right? Like, for UCLA, and they have a powder puff non-conference. Like, the only one, like, the South Alabama one will be a little interesting, but we're not going to know anything about them until they play Washington, maybe.
No, the good thing here was that
at least the defense, like, I feel like the offense should be fine, but there were some questions. There are definitely some times in that game where I was like, I don't think the offensive line is quite as good as they were last year. And they lost some guys off that line last year. But, like, overall, like, it's not going to matter against a team like Bowling Green.
Yeah, the other two things I thought were interesting was Kazmir Allen actually going to show up? Because I've heard his name for 5 years. And he did. He got, like, 80 yards, and you saw him run around and stuff. So
yeah.
Keep an eye on for – I don't – look, if this guy was the second coming of, like, DeAnthony Thomas, we would have known a long time ago. But – he could be a fun gadget tool as, like, he's either a junior or a senior now for that program. So that's interesting. And then some guy named Josiah Norwood is going to get, like, 1,000 yards, and nobody's ever heard of him before. So that was their top pass catcher. And, you know, Brian Kelly's always going to find Brian Kelly, Chip Kelly, pardon me, is always going to find like the random player that nobody looks. He's like, ah, that's my guy. So keep an eye out for him because he got like 90 yards. So that was interesting. And I thought the defense played pretty well. Yeah, I don't even think there's a line on the Alabama State game. That's how bad Alabama State is. So we can move on to USC, who just blew the doors off of Rice. 66-14. What did you think about this one?
But would not have covered with that 3-6 pick sixes.
That is true.
I mean, like, that's what's so fascinating about this one is, like, you should just, if you want to get, a more of a sense about the game, like, subtract 21 off of the Trojans' total. Because, like, 3 pick sixes is a complete and crazy anomaly. Yeah. Now, the offense for the Trojans was really good. They still put up 538 yards. They almost doubled Rice's yards, but I want to throw a butt out there. Like, Rice put up 280 yards against them. Now, some of this is like USC was scoring at will. They're the pick sixes. Like, Rice is going to get the ball back right after that. They're definitely going to have some possessions, in there. But I mean, it was like, I thought the run defense was a little bit concerning, for USC. I'd put a pin in that. Rice is a really, really bad football team, you know, so that's about it.
The thing that worried me at the beginning, like, it's in week one, what happens, right? Like, every first drive is scripted, right? We're going to do this. It's based on film study, the team the previous year, et cetera, et cetera. So I wasn't surprised that Rice was able to move. I was laughing about it, but I wasn't surprised they were able to make the defense look inept for like one or two drives, but that did stop. And credit USC to kind of putting the kibosh in that. They had that one big play where it was like 50-yard rush. And then after that, it was about 100 yards, which is still probably too much for a Rice team. To your point, Rob, this team sucks.
Yeah, I mean, this team is real. I mean, the Rice is one of the hardest jobs in all of college football.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if the running game is actually good because most of the offense in this game went through the air for USC. So
right.
Are they actually able to run the ball? Because that was a problem last year. And look, you know, Stanford beat Toothpaste like 40-14 and threw the ball around. It's the same Stanford team we saw last year. We don't really need to get into that game very much. Other than highlighting, like, their quarterback is healthy and everybody's healthy. This game is only a 9-point spread right now. USC plays Stanford next week. I'm curious, right? Like, because this is kind of the first two teams where I think we have a pretty solid handle of each in conference.
Right.
So what does BetaRank think about that line?
I mean, BetaRank has this projected as, and I have to, these numbers will get updated tomorrow. It's got USC by 7.5. My guess is it's going to be more. It's going to probably be more like 11 or 12 after we get to the games tomorrow. I run the week one data in there. But I mean, what's interesting, like, I mean, Colgate, I mean, look, Stanford certainly was able to like shut them down in the second half, but in the first half, Colgate was moving the football a little bit. I'm not sold on Stanford's defense suddenly becoming in any way good. I think USC is going to absolutely put up some points in this game. The question is Stanford's offense. Do you take away the, they had a huge run from Emmitt Smith's kid to start off the game. And it was like, Stanford's running game is back. And like,
and they did nothing else after that.
The dude averaged like less than 2 yards a carry, I think, after that. So no, but the actual Stanford offense that they've been running for the past couple of years, for the people that have been paying attention, is Tanner McKee throwing the ball around. And that's what you should expect to see. I'm interested to see, does that work with, you know, Humphreys and the guys that they have against this USC defense? Because like that was USC's Achilles heel last year, right? Was defending the pass. This should be fun. I think we're going to find out a lot about like where Stanford's offense maybe is and where USC's defense is.
I am so that 9 worries me a bit because I see what you're seeing, right? Like, Stanford legitimately has a good passing attack and their wide receivers are good. And USC was not good in the defense, and we've been talking about that this whole time. At the same time, this is a one-dimensional team in Stanford, and they have zero defense. Are they going
to
be?
They're going to have bad field position. Like they're going to have to go toe to toe to put up points. I don't know that they're going to be able to.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like, I wouldn't take Stanford to win unless USC turns the ball over three times.
Yeah. And like, I just don't trust the defense at all. The one thing that I'm interested in is, can they actually run the football? Because if USC can't, like they did, you know, previously, I still think they win because Williams could run the ball. Right. Like,
right.
But I actually want to see him hand that ball off to, I'm going to give the 9 and take USC. I actually don't like this a ton. I think like, I'm going to bet it just because I just don't like,
I think
Stanford.
It's a pretty good line.
Yeah.
Like, on it.
I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I'm going to take USC because I don't trust Stanford's defense.
Yeah.
And I think USC is going to be able to run the football against them. I think they're going to be able to throw the ball against them. I think Stanford is going to be stuck with bad field position and having to play catch up. And I don't think, I think USC is going to be, because I don't think Stanford's going to be able to run the ball really well. I think USC is going to, and particularly if they get an early lead, they are going to be able to pin their ears back, drive, you know, and Alex Grinch can run some interesting blitz packages. Like, I don't think USC's defense is particularly good. We'll see. You know, like, this will be the first into, like, they really, really stunk against the pass last year. Stanford will be a legit test of that. And McKee's probably going to get drafted and play in the NFL.
I'm curious. I mean, like, take a look at that over, right? I'm sure Vegas is all over it. I bet you they said it like 65 or something like that. But really, it'd be funny.
I mean, if McKee, like, we're real, like, it's, yeah, it is at 65, 65 and a half.
Oh, nailed it. Boom. Let me even look at that.
Look at you. But like, the thing that could, like, if they're like, if McKee throws any picks, like, this is gonna get ugly. Like, it, like, the final score, like, if McKee throws any picks, like, it's gonna be like that Rice one. Like, you're gonna be like, oh, the final score looks a lot worse than the actual, you know, some of the game, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Man, Max Meyer's smiling right now. Finally got me to figure out what these totals are. All right, let's go to let's do Arizona.
Let's
38-20, baby, like right on. Delora 300 yards. Here's the thing, and it's not like because the bar was so low for quarterbacks. For me, the real story was like, take that bar away and just look at what Delora was able to do: 300 yards, 4 touchdowns, a pick, and 8.5 yards per pass. Like, that's a beautiful stat line, period. And it's exceptionally beautiful stat line for Arizona. They rush for
against San Diego State, a team that plays some defense.
Yes, absolutely. They also rush for 162 yards. Now, the big asterisk here is they were playing Braxton Burmeister. So I don't know. Like, I'm sure you watched this game. What did you think of Arizona's performance? And, you know, was there any red flags? I was happy as a clam watching this game.
Well, I mean, look, here's the, you know, like, they did at times struggle to stop San Diego State running the football. That's true, right? Like, and San Diego State, that's what they generally do offensively. But, like, once they got San Diego State where they were behind, like, they absolutely put them in a chokehold, right? Like, Burmeister, you know, and Haskell, who played in the fourth quarter, weren't able to really get anything going throwing the football at all. That was really good. Arizona was able to put pressure on the quarterback at times, which was the first time that's happened in a really long time. Look, and San Diego State is a one-trick pony. The offense has been really bad for a number of years. So, like, shutting down San Diego State offensively is not necessarily, like, this is a little bit more like, hey, like, you, Arizona's defense showed up and did what you're supposed to do. They haven't done that in years, right? So, like, Arizona, we're not saying, like, it's going to have some, like, legitimately good top 30 defense, but still, like, they managed to, like, show up and, like, you know, put a, you know, bad group of 5 offense in a sleeper hold. And that's good. You know, offensively, like, flip it around though, this has consistently been a very good defense, an excellent group of 5 defense. They returned 3 out of 4 starters. I'm not going to name them, but somebody emailed me, like a national college football writer emailed me on, you know, reached out to me on Twitter to ask about what I thought about Arizona's offensive line against what he thought was going to be a nasty defensive line for the Aztecs, because they returned 3 out of 4 guys from last year. And Arizona's offensive line showed up in a big way against San Diego State. And it really does look like a lot of the problems from last year were the quarterbacks and the wide receivers.
Well, that and Jacob Cowing just made Arizona State.
Oh, dude. Ooh, that guy is good. Legitimately good. Like, everybody in the conference is going to be talking about, like, USC's wide receivers. But, like, Jacob Cowing is legitimately, if he's healthy, is, like, you can just pencil him in if he plays like that for an All-Pac-12 spot.
Yeah. Now, Arizona has Mississippi State at home.
Ooh.
At, like, you know, 1 a.m. Eastern time for the
poor Mississippi State
for the Bulldogs. Yeah. And now, and it is Mike Leach who, let's be real here. Oftentimes
I say poor Mississippi State about the start time, not about the game.
Oh, well, here's the thing. Like, I don't want to overanalyze this game, but San Diego State had a good defense. Arizona dropped 40 points on them. Now, Mississippi State's defense is a whole nother animal. Like, and you've covered Mississippi State, right? Like, the only thing that, like, I want you to go through all of this stuff for them because you know them better than I do. The one thing that gives me pause in terms of taking Mississippi State is, A, it's in the desert, it's at night, and Mike Leach takes his eye off the ball on games like this all the time. We've seen it year after year after year, and now he comes to Tucson with a raucous crowd and an offense now. But what are the Cats going up against with Mississippi State?
So look, like the offense for Mississippi State was really good last season. They graded out at number 9 in beta rank. They're a really efficient. They're a little bit more like the Gardner Minshew version than like the Anthony Gordon fun. I mean, like the Gardner Minshew version was also pretty fun, but like the Anthony Gordon version was real fun. But they're high efficiency. You know, Rodgers absolutely finds his checks downs. And he was really good against Memphis. I mean, they had a long lightning delay in that game. And he came out, didn't miss a beat. You know, they rolled, they threw for 450. They even managed to run for 97. But he was really, I mean, again, a really high completion percentage. I think what's interesting though, is like Memphis isn't a great, I mean, they've been kind of on the downhill since, Norvell went to Florida State, and they did okay, offensively against Mississippi State. I'm interested to see, because this Mississippi State defense really did need to take a step forward coming into this year. Now, oddly enough, Arizona is going to get to see the same defense twice. So Zach Arnett is a Rocky Long disciple. He runs that same Rocky Long 3-3-5 that San Diego State runs. Now, he's clearly going to be running it with better players. But they were at 37 in beta rank last season. I actually think Arizona's going to be able to move the football around against these guys. Now, I expect them to improve defensively off of that 37 number. But I think from what we saw, I mean, San Diego State's going to be a legitimately good defense. Like, Arizona's going to be able to move the ball here and put up some points. I think, like, there's a, like, look, like, beta rank had this at, and when I update this, it's going to shrink considerably off of this, probably closer to 10. Beta rank had it at 24 to start the season. Now that we've seen these games played, it's probably going to shrink down to 10. Vegas also has this now at like 10, 9?
10 and a half. It opened 10 at and 9. Half.
It's been bet up. Yeah, it's been bet up because like people do believe it. Like sharp bettors do buy into Mississippi State. I think Arizona's defense is going to have some problems in this game. Yeah, absolutely. And I think this will be a little bit more of a baptism of fire for Johnny Nance and their new defensive coordinator. I think Mississippi State can cover 9. I think they can probably also cover 10. I don't think Arizona's defense is going to be quite there against what should be a really, really good offense. But I think Arizona, like, I think this should be a really high scoring affair too. It's only 62.
Yeah.
But like I think that number could be in danger. I think Arizona's gonna, like, Mississippi State might get close to 40. Arizona should probably get, you know, near 30.
That 10 of the hook. Right. So it opened 9 and I was like gonna take Arizona, but 10 and a half. Now we're starting up. I'm gonna take Mississippi State. I think that Leach is gonna just do what he does with Arizona every time, which is just like, you know, you put him in his little fish tank and feed it whenever he darn well pleases. And I just think the coaching staff at Mississippi State is going to figure out some things to make things more challenging. Like the worry is Nance, the defensive coordinator for Arizona. Like,
yeah.
I just feel like Leach and his team are going to spin him around like a top.
I mean, Arizona's got some decent corners. I don't think that they have, I don't think that they're going to be able to cover what Leach has got going to Mississippi State, like four deep.
Yeah. Give me the cat or, give me the Bulldogs. I just, 10.5 is a lot. 9 was awesome. So, I mean, like
on the road, I mean, it is your, to your point, like it's going to, this is going to be kicking off at 10 o'clock PM Mississippi State time. So it's going to kick off at 11 PM on the East Coast.
Yeah.
That's a late game. I mean, I don't know. I mean, this one always, this one feels like one of those weird ones though, right? Like how many times, like where some Pac-12 team with a new coach, like just beat somebody at home that they're not supposed to. I'm not believing in that. Like I'm going to take Mississippi State here.
Yeah. I'm not betting it though. Like that's, I guess that's, which is a testament to Arizona where like normally like, oh, that's it.
Oh, no, I mean, like if this was last year's Arizona squad and it would probably be something around like a 24-25 point spread, like I would actually just full on like bet the house on Mississippi State to hit that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to TCU against Colorado. TCU 38, Colorado 17. For me, this was a tale of two halves. Because I didn't bet this game. I was trying to get that last hook. I wanted 14.5. It got bet up to 14 and then it went back down. And I'm glad I didn't. But it reminded me about Carl Durrell because I've seen this a couple times where the Colorado team comes out in the first half and then just a complete lack of awareness and adjustments are made at halftime. And like the game that this reminds me of is when Colorado's up by like 28 or something like against UCLA. And then UCLA like still covered a 13-point spread in the second half. Like that happened here. Colorado hung with TCU in the first half. It didn't convert on a goal line stand. They gave up a special teams touchdown. And I'm like, okay, I'm like feeling myself, right? Because like I kind of want to went out on a limb here. And I thought, okay, like 14.5, 13.5, that's a lot.
And Colorado, I mean, had outgained them.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, yep. Like it didn't look, I mean, like TCU looked completely discombobulated and Colorado looked mildly competent at times, especially when Shrout came in.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, big controversy now, right? Is it Lewis or Shrout? I think it'll be interesting to see what Durrell says about that because they kind of came back and forth in the game, which is weird. Which is a problem for me because I don't trust either of those quarterbacks. So like if Shrout couldn't beat out Lewis and then we saw what Lewis did, I'm like, I don't know about Shrout. But then the second half happened and that was a problem. Like TCU overall ran for 275 yards on the ground. And I think the thing that was sad for me was there was at no point in that second half where I for a moment thought that Colorado was going to cover the spread or even win. Like there's just, I had no hope at all. And that might be it for like, right. Like I kind of hung my hat on, okay, it's the first game of the year. They're going to have a game plan. They're at altitude and they're playing a new coaching staff and they still lost by 21 points. Like,
yeah,
that might be it for this Colorado team, I think. And then they got to play Air Force. What did you think about this game?
Yeah. I mean, there's some real, when it started getting out of hand in the second half, right. The body language is bad for Colorado. And they just, I mean, like, man, TCU ran all over them. I mean, almost all of the damage you see was in the second half, right? Like, so, Air Force is not coming in with a brand new offensive coordinator and like going to start a different quarterback and all that. Like, they got the same OC, they got the same QB, they know exactly what they're doing. One of the best group of five quarterbacks on offenses you're going to see. Gosh, this line opened at 15. It's already up to 17. And this is on CBS, man.
Lord almighty.
This is they're getting the 3:30 on CBS treatment. It's on the road. You know, like Air Force is going to be amped for this game against an in-state rival. Yeah, Air Force, like, here's where this game's at. Air Force's favorite, like some of this is Air Force is going to slow it down. Like they're a high efficiency offense, but Air Force is favored by 17. The total is 45.5.
Yeah. That was going to say
that's brutal.
Yep. It's like, this smells to me like a 30-7 game or 30-10. Or
now, I have questions maybe Shroud could throw on these guys. Cause like Air Force isn't great defending the pass. But what I worry about is like, I mean, here's the only thing. Like, the only thing I really worry about in this game is, like, Colorado backdooring. Yeah, that's it. But 17's a lot. I mean, so here's the thing. 17 is a lot for a service academy because they do slow it down, and you can't always trust their defense.
But, like, who's he throwing to? Like, Daniel Arias? Like, I mean, I don't know.
There's nobody that you're that excited about with it. You're like
Lamonius Craig. Like, I've heard that name a couple of years, and just, I mean, I know he's still, I think he's a sophomore, but I don't know. Like that, and like Shrout was throwing 500, right? Like he was 13 for 23.
He was. It was pretty ugly at times. Like, I he looked better than Lewis, but that is a very low bar. You know?
I think the move.
And Lewis actually adds something in the run game. Too. I mean, like, we're talking about, like, oh, they should definitely start Shrout. Like, Shrout looked more lively, but neither of them did a thing in the second half.
Yeah. I'm wondering if the move is second half, you know, betting that second half and see what happens. Because I've seen this movie before where a Pac-12 team plays a service academy and just chop block after. And I know they're, like, starting to cut back on these, but, like, after the third quarter, I mean, if your team is demoralized, like, it gives up. And if this team has already given up on Carl Durrell, the last thing you want to do is go to Air Force and just get cut blocked by these service academy guys. I'll lay the points. I don't care. I'll take Air Force. And if Colorado covers the spread, God bless them. But, like, this is their weakness, and I just don't, you know, and I'm gonna ride with that.
If you give up 275 to TCU, you're giving up 350 to Air Force.
Yeah. So are you taking a Colorado?
I'm taking Air Force.
There you go.
I'm just like, I'm worried about Colorado throwing in the towel. Like, if this gets ugly early, like if they're stumbling around and they're if Colorado's not able to put up points early, like I expect Air Force to score nearly every possession.
Let's go Cal. Let's do Cal here. Cal 34, UC Davis 13. Again, like I approached this game with a bias of throwing some darts because UC Davis made a game of this for a bit and Cal did give up too many yards. Again, with that said, like I thought Davis legitimately had a chance to win this game, like straight up, and they didn't. And Cal was able to cover and win. And like Jay Knott, the running back, right? Like I didn't think DeCarlis Brooks was the guy and looks like they got their guy in Ott. We saw Hunter and J. Michael Sternovit, who are like those four-star guys, come in and get theirs. So there are some positives here. Plummer didn't throw the ball to the other team like seven times. But 400 yards to Davis, man. Like that's bad. That's bad.
That is, I mean, Cal was a middle of the road Power Five defense last year, which is not bad by Pac-12 standards. But oh, buddy, there are some problems. I mean, they gave up 5.4 per rush to UC Davis. You know, like that hurts. I mean, and you know, like that's probably your biggest problem here, right? I mean, now they did give up a lot, like a big 60-yard run in there, and that hurts, but. Yeah, I mean, it's not as if, like, I mean, they were giving up 4.7 to the backup, you know. And then Hastings was able to, I mean, look, a lot of those are high percentage completions, right? Like, he's throwing, you know, like, he went 32 of 50. He, you know, his average per attempt was 4.8. That's not great, right? But they still got, I mean, there's a lot of yards, you know, like, they didn't do too badly. And they threw two picks. I mean, that certainly hurt them. But that's like, I mean, you see underneath the hood here, UC Davis almost put up the same amount of yards as Cal did. And it's not like a lot of this game was in garbage time, right? You know, like it was only at halftime, it was only 17-7. I'm not like, this is one of those ones that like, if you just looked at the overall score, you'd be like, like Cal did fine. You know, like it's not quite like the kind of performance that like just look at the final score. You'd be like, yeah, like maybe some things went wrong for them. Like maybe they turned the ball over more than UC Davis did or something like that. Right. And then you open up the box score and you're like, oh, this did not go well at all. And that's probably my biggest watch out here is like, I like the defense looks kind of leaky here. And the offense did fine, but it's against an FCS school. And so like, I don't know that answers our questions, right?
Yeah.
Who are they getting now? Is it Notre Dame?
UNLV.
No, they get a week off. UNLV. Oh, well, all right. That's a tough matchup.
It's weird because I want to take UNLV, right? They're given 13, and UNLV is significantly improved. Baderank had been all over that. You had been on it before the numbers really jumped on them. I know Bud Elliott is been highlighting UNLV's improvement. Like yeah. UNLV is not a bottom feeder Mountain West team, but the Mountain West probably isn't going to be that good this year. And right. I've seen Cal just stomp on Nevada, right? Like, remember Carson Strong's coming into town and Jay Norvell, and like Cal's like, nope. And they were able to put up points against TCU. I think they have a quarterback that like isn't going to light people up. But I mean, I can't, like, how good is UNLV's defense? Because I think Cal scores at least 30 points in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I mean, I think Cal's going to be able to put up points. Defense is really been the bugaboo for UNLV, you know, in last year. I mean, their offense has been able to take some steps forward, you know, and they gave up 21 to Idaho State, which is a bad FCS. I mean, like, there's a different, like, UC Davis is a decent FCS team. Idaho State's a really bad FCS team. But Brumfield is the guy to watch out for here. He absolutely lit Idaho State up throwing the ball. But he can move, and UNLV can be dangerous running the ball when he does. My guess is they didn't show a lot. I mean, like, I think, I mean, 13, oh God, that's a good line. It's like annoyingly good.
Cause Cal's going to score.
Right. Like Cal's going to probably get to like 28 or 30, but 13 is like, you're holding UNLV to 17. Oh man, like I think UNLV has a better offense than UC Davis. Like that's what worries me in this is like I think UNLV can get to 21 against Cal. Aroundish, right? Like maybe it's 20. Like so they, you know, let's say there's a couple field goals in there. Can Cal then get to like 35?
I mean that's where you're
Where's UNLV? Like, I gotta look. Hold on a second. Now I'm curious because like UNLV's defense was pretty bad last year. But how bad? How bad are we looking at? Oh, they were bad. 104. See, they were at 86 last year. So like they were last year. Like they were funny because like they would like Vegas was a little bit behind on them, and they would have these lines that were clearly too big for a UNLV team that was improving down the stretch.
Yeah, and it's weird because we were more focused on. Can UNLV score? Not can UNLV stop anybody? Because the spread was so high. So it's like, oh, can UNLV score 25 points? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Rather than can UNLV stop a team from scoring 50?
So like Baderank projecting it into this year only had it -8. I'm going to take UNLV. I'm going to roll the dice.
Yeah. I am too because I think UNLV will be able to score on Cal. And if you're going to ask me on whether or not Cal can convert on a touchdown or two or get the field goal, I don't trust that offense enough to say, oh yeah, they're definitely, they can close things out. I think the over on this is interesting. I don't know what it is, but I would just take a look at that. If it's low, if it's like 55, like absolutely take the over, but I bet you Vegas probably put it at like 57. I'm curious what the over is.
50.
Oh man! Oh, I'm all over that over, man. Let's go. That's the bet. But
because I think Cal's defense is maybe not as good as we would like.
No, I don't believe so. So, but I will also take the point. So I'll take you on the UNLV. I'll take the over, and I think we have one more game here, Robin. It's actually the game we're going to go to. So worried here about
sweating.
Washington State 24, Idaho 17, Rob. This was, we talked a little bit about this at the beginning, but I'm sure you have some worries also.
Yeah, I mean, this was not great. Like, I don't know. I mean, we talk about this, right? Like, it's important to sort of like, you know, try to put in context of like where a team was. Idaho was a pretty bad FCS team last season. And, so they come in, and no way should we be thinking like, oh, what's going, like Idaho, like Washington State should have gone out and rolled them. Now, Washington State, Idaho jumped all over him, jumped out to a 10-0 lead. But the, you know, underneath the hood, you know, it's a little concerning, right? Like, sure, Wazoo turned it over three times, but Idaho turned it over twice. They gave up 274 yards. But I think the biggest concern is like they only put up 358. They only threw for 215. Now they did run for 143, but they just did not look great. I mean, Cam Ward, who, like we talked about, like with Will Rogers from Mississippi State, he runs a more efficient version of the air raid that, you know, it is going to be close in, you know, hitting a lot of short stuff, finding the check down, but only averaging 5.4 per attempt against an FCS school, and not a great one at that, is really bad.
Yeah. Well, one quick correction though, Rob. So Idaho or, you're right. The Cougs gave it up three times. They had three fumbles that they lost. And one of them was a soup. Cause I apologize. I was adding Idaho's two interceptions to Washington State. My apologies. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think defensively they did okay. Right. I mean, if you look at it, they only gave up 274. This did not appear to be a very fast paced game. You know, neither of these teams like is rolling up yards, but there's some definite concerns here, right? Like Idaho wasn't able to run the ball at all against them, but they were able to throw the ball, and got 6.6 per. Against it. Like, this is like, look, Wisconsin's offense is a big question mark to put it. I mean, they played Illinois State and lit them up as they should. Right. But they started out with 100-yard interception return, which is not great. Wisconsin like doubled them up on yards, like put up a ton more points. Illinois State turned the ball over two times, but like the big question, right, is like, what are you going to get out of Mertz? I mean, so, and what's this offense going to look like? I'm just not sure this Washington State offense, and this is the matchup we were excited about, right? Was potentially seeing this Washington State offense, if they were good against a really good Wisconsin defense. Oh man, like this does not look like a fun matchup right now. This looks like Washington State could struggle to move the football.
I think the more likely scenario is that Wisconsin covers and it's an under. But
17. It's up to 17.
I know. That was the but, because there is a word like, but I also think that what we saw from Washington State, I just can't imagine. With, like, they still have good wide receivers. From everything I've heard about Cam Ward is that he's quite good. I don't want to overreact to that. And I know it's bad. Like, Idaho sucks. Like, so.
I mean, that's the tough thing. Is like, yes, we should not, like, I mean, teams are going to stub their toe. Teams are also going to round into form, right?
Yeah.
It's just tough to see someone rounding into form against Wisconsin on the road.
Yeah, that's true.
Brian and I will be there. We will be jumping around. Yeah. You know? it will be at 3:30 on Fox. This is getting national coverage. Like, you know, we'll be there, like, dressed, and everyone will be in red. So, yeah.
I think 18, it's up to 18 now.
Oh, my God.
That's a lot. I'm going to take the points. I do think that the under is the play. Because, I mean, if Ward plays super well, I just don't see a world where they're dropping 28 points on Wisconsin, right? But I also don't like Graham Mertz at all. And I think they're going to try to run the ball a lot. And you're just going to see that clock tick, 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 tick. And, like, I mean, it's possible that Wisconsin just sits on the head of Washington State the whole game. Or in the second half. And they're like, oh, we're up by 10. Like, joke's on you. And then just try to run the ball. So I'm going to take the points. I'm going to look at that under and see what we got once it's game time. But I'm fascinated. I love Madison. I've been there once. I had a great time. I'm excited to go back. They got the Spotted Cow Brewery there, and let's go, let's go. Who are you taking?
We got lots of. Like 17 feels like a lot. I think Wazoo's gonna have a couple turnovers, so I'm gonna go with the Badgers at home.
Okay, yeah, that's probably. In retrospect, like I said this about the Colorado pick, like I'm gonna look back at this and regret it, and I did, but I'm gonna try it on this one. That's it, Rob. We got every one, every last one.
These are the longest shows, because like when there's the like the, when it's non-conference, like there's just no breaks. It's like, I mean, our only break this week is that Stanford, we have one conference game.
Yeah,
like we only have one more week of this, thank God.
Yep, no buys, none of that stuff. If you are going to the Washington State Wisconsin game, hit us up. Rob, where can people find you on Twitter?
At BetaRankFB.
Or you can find us at Pac-12. At 12PAC Radio, at 12PAC Radio. I'll also check, like, I haven't been checking our Gmail account, so I will do that before we go. Let us know if you're going. We'd love to meet up with you. Shout out to our friend Ryan, who we're going to meet there. Invited us to a couple of Washington State parties, so we're excited to join that.
What if not, too? Like, hang out with us after the game, because we will be somewhere watching football.
Yes, absolutely. And if you have recommendations on where to go, I sent Rob the Best of Madison, but I just found, you know, randomly off the internet, who knows if it's actually good or not. So send us recommendations. If there's a bar or food or like a cheese, like if there's a cheese place, I love cheese. I would love to go to a cheese place. Send it our way.
All the cheese. I will not miss any gym days, because I'm going to, I'm not lactose intolerant, and I may need to take some sort of lactate, because I'm going to eat that much dairy.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. I'm so excited.
Give me the ice cream. Give me the cheese. Give me all of it. Like, I'll need a wheelbarrow, like to not because I will be drinking, but because I will have that much cheese and ice cream.
Yeah. I'm taking advantage of Rob's cheese eating experiences. So like, he might know better, more than I do. You make all those pizzas and whatnot. So I might just ride with you when you're picking out which ones to taste. So
I'm the person that's, I'm like, you can sell me on anything. That's like, you can take like any kind of cheese and be like, oh, we smoked this. And I'm like, I'm in. Like, what is like it could be like smoked Kraft. And I'd be like, yes, let's try that. Like smoked Kraft singles. Like, why not? like any kind of fancy, like schmancy, or like stuff that like, God, like it's crazy. Like where, you know, where I, like there's a really good cheese place at, if you've been to, like, I was in London for work, and I ate an immense amount of cheese at Tower Market. And they had this amazing cheese place, but I bought like anything that I could barely understand the accent of the guy doing it. But I was like, anything that was smoked, they're like, oh, this is really stinky cheese, and we put some sort of like blackberry or blueberry in it. I'm like, I'll have that too. And
oh man, I'm so excited. Well, we are excited about the trip. Let us know if you're going. We will happy to share our cheese with you. And enjoy lots of games. So at 12 Pack Radio. Thanks, Rob, for coming on, and we'll catch everybody next week.